Made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign. Locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, presenting Urbana Uncorked, a special wine tasting event to benefit WILL AM-FM-TV on Saturday, May 15th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Urbana Civic Center. Dozens of wines will be featured along with a silent auction and music by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. Tickets are available at the door or in advance at the Corkscrew. For more information, call 337-7704.
Hi, my name is Markeisha Moulton, a 7th grader from Franklin Magnet Middle School. Seven of us have been investigating the story of school desegregation in Champaign-Urbana for a special radio program. We talk with community members about their school experiences before and after segregation was made illegal in the United States. Join us for our journey, Stories of Desegregation and Community in Champaign-Urbana, Saturday, May 15th at 5 p.m., only on WILL AM 580.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, we have Harriet Williamson, Travis Stansel, and Henry Freinas at the controls. Tomorrow morning, I just want to mention that in the first hour, I'm sure we'll continue with some of the things that we were talking about just in the first hour this morning, and that is the concerns over allegations over mistreatment of Iraqi prisoners in Iraq. And we'll have two guests lined up talking with us by telephone in that hour. Wayne Madsen, who is investigative journalist and columnist. He's also former intelligence officer for the U.S. National Security Agency, and also Marjorie Cohen, professor at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She is executive vice president of the National Lawyers Guild and also the U.S. representative to the Executive Committee of the American Association of Jurists. So the two of them in the first hour. Hour number two, we'll shift our focus and talk about technology. And there our guest will be Paul Levinson. He's chair of communication and media studies at Fordham University. And we'll be talking about a book that he's authored, Cell Phone, the Story of the World's Most Mobile Medium and How It Has Transformed Everything. So that'll be in hour number two. We're here weekday mornings from 10 to noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week, and I always welcome your questions and comments. In this part of Focus 580, we're talking about birds, about bird watching, maybe also if you have questions about feeding the birds and things that you can do to attract more birds to your yard. We can do all of that, and our guest is Larry Keller. He is the owner of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign and Peoria, a place that, among other things, sells seed and bird feeders and other sorts of things that are related to enjoying and watching birds. It's been quite a while since he's been here on the program, but it's a topic that we like to touch on every once in a while. And this is a good time because, as he said, as we were chatting here before the program, because of migration, the spring migration is still going on, so there are a lot of birds coming through that you can see at this time of year. And so whatever questions people have, I know he will do his best to give you an answer. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For being here. We appreciate it. I'll tell you what, we have a caller here, and rather than make them wait, we'll just get right to it on our line number one in Savoy. Hello. The caller there on line one? No, I guess. Oh, okay. Well, if they gave up and would like to call back, they can do that. And if we did something on our end, we're sorry. Occasionally, we have little glitches here. At any rate, anybody who has questions, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, we're just talking a little bit here. I'm glad that you were here because there was a question I've been wanting to ask somebody about a bird that I saw one day. It was probably maybe a month ago, 6 weeks ago or something like that. I was walking to work, and I was going to follow the same path. And at one point, I crossed over the Boneyard, which is right in the campus area. It happens to be right behind the astronomy building. So one day, I see this bird, and it caught my eye because it was not familiar in the sense that it was not something I'd remember seeing before here. And as I said to you, I thought to myself, could that be a kingfisher?
Right.
Because it was the right color and had the right shape and had the right markings. And I sort of said to myself, a kingfisher in the middle of Urbana, No, I don't really think so. But in fact, you said, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Any body of water in Illinois can hold kingfishers. And a lot of the streams and creeks that are open, even in the wintertime, you'll see kingfishers holding in those areas. If they can find food, they're going to stick around. And it's a very, very common sight here, even in town, like you say, on the Boneyard.
Yeah. Well, that just gets me thinking about the fact that they're, you know, they're even in an urban area like this, the possibilities for seeing a very wide range of birds. And maybe just certain times,
exactly,
that might be the issue, because they're going to be passing through, going one way or going the other way. But that if you kind of know where to look, and if you are looking, you're going to see them because they're there.
Right, yeah. Urbana-Champaign is really unique because it's kind of an oasis in the middle of nowhere. We've got a lot of trees here. We've got some water here. So you see a lot of different species that stop over. They don't stick around necessarily. They move through. Mm-hmm. But while they're here, it's really neat to enjoy them.
Well, right now, are there some things that you'd say people be looking out for, because it's very likely you might see a particular species?
Right. We've got spring migration is underway. It's been in full swing here for the last couple weeks. We'll continue for a couple more weeks. We've got a lot of birds moving up from Central and South America. Some of the real highlights this time of year, of course, hummingbirds are coming through. I've got a couple different species of orioles that are showing up in people's yards. Also the rose-breasted grosbeak. That's a real common one people see this time of year at the bird feeder.
Mm-hmm. And that's a bird that I don't know if people would immediately recognize, that they might maybe confuse it for a robin.
Yeah, it's a little bit confusing when they first see it, but if they look real closely, the markings are very distinct, very dark on the head and the back, and that bright red bib on their chest really sticks out on the males, so it's very easy to identify that way.
Okay. Well, we have some callers now. Let's start in, and I believe we'll go first to Savoy and line number 2 right here. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me this time?
Yes.
Yes, good morning.
Oh, okay, good. I have just a quick question, really. I have a friend that has a campground out on, out in a little bit east of here, and she wanted to put some, you know, a bird feeder up so that when she's out there she can see the birds. But her concern was that she wouldn't be out there, you know, all the time, and so she wouldn't be able to necessarily refill the feeder as often as if it was, say, at her house. Is that a concern? Is that something that she should worry about?
There's been a lot of studies done on that, how dependent birds are on our bird feeders once we start feeding.
Mm-hmm.
University of Wisconsin some years ago did a really in-depth study using black-capped chickadees as their study group. And what they had concluded was that birds are using bird feeders as a secondary source of food. It's not their primary source whatsoever. The only time that you will see a problem with it is if we get an extremely hard winter storm come through, a lot of snow, a lot of wind, and it covers up the natural food source for those birds. And by having that feeder out there, if they're used to going that as their backup and it's not there, it could cause some problems there. But that's also part of nature. That's what's going to happen with them anyway. So if you feed for 2 weeks and stop for a week, or feed for a month and stop for a month, it's not going to harm the birds whatsoever.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. I know that's something that there may be some, I don't want to say controversy about, but that there, for example, there are some people who think that it's important to feed in those times when other food sources are really low. So what you're doing, you're helping them out in the wintertime, for example, if you put out seed. But
correct.
Then those people might say, but in the summertime, when there are other sources, then they might say, well, there are people who say, well, I don't feed the birds during the summertime.
Right. Our thinking is kind of backwards with what actually is happening. During the fall time, that's when plants are dying off. There's a lot of natural seed available out there. Mm-hmm. During the springtime, everything is growing. We don't have a lot of abundant food sources as far as seeds go for those seed-eating type birds. Of course, insects are abundant during the spring and summertime, so your insect feeders are doing extremely well with that. However, the seed eaters really will hit the feeders a lot harder during the springtime than you'll see in the early fall time.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk next with someone in Mattoon, and that's line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I live in a rural subdivision. In fact, my backyard butts up against a farm field. And I've kept some feeders out for a few years now. I primarily just use a mixed feed with millet and cracked corn and sunflower seed for the one feeder. I have a thistle feeder, which really has turned into a singles bar for the goldfinches, which is kind of fun. And then I have some hummingbird feeders. And what I'm curious about is, one, is it too early or is it time yet to set out the hummingbird feeders? And then the other question, a little more maybe complex, is that my regular feeder attracts a great number of sparrows and blackbirds and cowbirds and quite a few blue jays who tend to run off all the other birds, the finches, the cardinals, and such. And not to be prejudicial against any kind of birds, but I would rather get some of the, you know, nicer, attractive songbirds in and not necessarily feed all the blackbirds and all the sparrows everything.
Right.
Got any suggestions along that line?
First, on the hummingbird feeders, they should be up. Okay. In central Illinois, we typically tell people tax day, April 15th, is a good time to start thinking about getting the hummingbird feeders up. We'll start seeing some of the early males arriving in mid to late April. The big push will come through the first couple weeks of May and continue through the first week or two of June. So now is definitely the time to have the hummingbird feeders up.
Well, I put them up this week. Am I too late? Did I miss them?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No. It seems that there's still a lot of new occurrences showing up just this week. So you should be fine this week, no problem.
Okay.
As far as the main feeder that you're feeding a mix of different grains in, grackles is one of the biggest problems that we have here in central Illinois during the spring and summertime feeding.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways to help eliminate that is stop feeding altogether for about 3 or 4 days,
mm-hmm.
and then replace your seed with straight safflower seed.
Okay.
Most of the time, it's not 100% guarantee, but most of the time that will totally eliminate or at least cut back the number of grackle and sparrow and cowbird problems that you're having.
Okay.
Safflower is very species specific. Cardinals love it.
Mm-hmm.
The rose-breasted grosbeaks coming through this time of year love it. House finches will eat it very well, and so will your mourning doves.
Okay.
All
right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Belgium, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I hope my comments here don't take up too much of your program, but I have several things I'd like to discuss with your guest.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I've got to put a little plug in for an area here. I don't know if you all are familiar with it, but just north of Danville, the water company has a large lake that they use, and they have turned the northern area of it into a bird sanctuary, and it's called Heron Park. It's a waterfowl. You have a little walkway that goes out over the water, and they have another land portion that walks out into a blue heron nesting area, which both are very interesting. And they have an observation tower. That all of this has transpired over the last, couple, 3 years. And they have nesting eagles, or at least they did last year. Lot of birds to see, because obviously the Wabash River is a very strong flyway for the migration, and these birds go up any stream that contributes to this waterway. So we get a lot of birds up there and a lot of things to see.
Yeah, that's an excellent area, and the bald eagles are back nesting in that location again this year.
Yes, it's a fabulous spot. I can only highly recommend it to anybody that'd like to watch birds.
So tell us again where
is it? Slightly north of Danville. Unfortunately, right now the road is being torn up on one side, but it's on Newell Road, located right on the North Fork River, where the Vermilion River has been backed up because of expansion on their water situation. And I really would be hard-pressed to tell you how to get there without using the road that is now torn up. But a little later on, you can come at it from the eastern direction up of what's called Old Ottawa Road. But you'd have to use a map to find it.
Okay.
And I'd suggest folks doing that. But once the road gets fixed, all you have to do is go up for Main Street, turn right at Walmart. Turn left at Walmart, and you'll be right there.
Yeah.
But that's that's for a little later in the year. I own some property which has a stream that goes through it, and I do see kingfishers all the time on it. And interesting birds, like you say. The other thing I would want to point out, as far as feeding birds, I have several acres that I have allowed to go back to nature. And one of the fabulous feeds that I keep a lot of birds around with is I encourage Queen Anne's lace. It's a pretty flower during the summer, and in the fall, when it gets done blooming, the leaves, the flower curls up and just has a little pod of fabulous seeds and stuff that feed birds all year long until they finally fall off here in late spring. And you'll keep a lot of them around and you don't have to do any work at all.
Exactly.
Very nice feeding. But the thing that I've started doing a little bit more now is I have a few dead trees on the property. Instead of knocking them down, I leave them sit there. And I've developed a woodpecker colony. And we have a very large one now that I was going to ask you about.
Okay.
Has a red stripe across the top of his head. And I mean, when I say large, he's maybe a foot tall, maybe a little bit better. Is that what's called a pileated woodpecker?
Is he mostly black on the body?
Mm-hmm. With some white on it, kind of a little
right.
bit. But a real bright red stripe. Not like a red-headed woodpecker, which is large red, just a stripe across the top.
Right. Anytime you see a woodpecker that's the size of getting close to the size of a crow, that's the pileated. The Danville area holds a nice population of them. Allerton Park down in Monticello also holds a nice population around East Central Illinois.
I notice he really likes to peck at my truck mirror. He goes to town on that.
Yeah. They're a really neat bird. They're kind of a shy bird, so people don't see them very often. They will feed at suet feeders if people put suet feeders out. But the biggest thing that you'll notice with them is the amount of hammering and destruction they can do on dead wood. It's pretty phenomenal to watch.
That's amazing you say they're shy, because I have three or four of them, and they don't even hardly fly away.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of trees that are dead, and I can see that they're working nest holes in them, or whatever that hole they do put in them.
Right.
And everything. Well,
great.
I hate to take too much more of your time, but good day, sir.
All righty,
well,
thank you.
Thanks for the call. Anyone is certainly welcome to call here. Maybe I should introduce again our guest, Larry Keller. He is owner of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign and Peoria, and it's a place where he sells things related to birds and bird watching, certainly seed and feeders and things like that. And if you have questions about watching birds or feeding birds or birds in general, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next is a caller in Champaign, and this would be line number 3. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good morning.
Yeah, the migration is great right now. In about 15 minutes, I got 6 warbler species right outside my door. So I encourage anybody in the Champaign Urbana to take a look outside. They're around. Questions. One, I wonder if your guests could comment on the planting of native species, because they tend to harbor higher insect loads than non-natives, particularly for the insectivorous birds that are coming through right now. And secondly, the two callers before commented on feeding, and house sparrows and to a lesser extent starlings represent a pretty big problem for cavity nesting native birds. So I think that a lot of these feeders that are up at this time are feeding house sparrows and starlings, and that is potentially quite bad for cavity nesters.
Yeah, the cavity nesting birds, there's no question the invasive species of the house sparrow and the European starling have really devastated species such as your woodpecker species. One of the big ones around here especially is the eastern bluebirds have been hurt extremely. It's been extremely tough on them. One of the things that we try to educate people on is when you are doing cavity nesting, putting out houses, say, for example, the bluebirds, one of the things you do not want to encourage are the house sparrows. And so placement is key. For example, certain areas in the middle of town, we won't sell a bluebird house to somebody who lives where there's no possibility of a bluebird occurring. So we try to discourage the nesting. Another example is the purple martin houses. We really encourage people to monitor those closely, make sure house sparrows are not reproducing and breeding.
Would you encourage destroying house sparrow nests when they're nesting in bluebird or purple martin boxes?
Correct, yeah. We encourage that the nesting material be removed and destroyed, and there are certain mechanisms nowadays that you can put on those particular houses to trap those birds to remove them from that environment.
Okay. Yeah, well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to another Champaign caller here. This is line number 2. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a question. I want to get rid of birds. What happened is that some of the birds keep coming to roost, nesting on my pillar on the front porch, and they really make a big mess out of it. How do I prevent the birds from roosting over there and making a little nest?
What kind of species of bird is it?
I don't even know. Every time I come home, there's a big little nest, and every morning I poke it off, sweep it off the porch, and then they come back the next day. There's a lot of straw, things like that again.
Okay. Depending on the species is what you can do. A lot of people believe that you can put up the fake owls, the plastic owls up in an area that'll scare the birds away. That is useful to a certain extent. One of those things is you have to move that around quite often. If not, it just becomes part of the landscape, and you'll see the birds will actually land on top of the silly thing. And so there's no use in messing with that. Doing what you're doing is keeping up with it and trying to discourage them. That's the best way possible, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard some people say I need to put some aluminum foil or put a piece of glass mirror. Would that scare them?
No.
No. Oh.
No. Once again, it's something that's just going to become part of the landscape, and they'll get used to it after a few hours.
I see.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. I guess one thing that probably we ought to remind people is that the animals, they're just trying to live their lives and finding their way, and that it may not always be convenient for us, but we have to kind of live with them. And also people have to realize that almost all birds are protected species.
Correct.
So harming them, and I think the only ones that aren't protected are, is it pigeons and sparrows?
The house sparrows that we were talking about.
And the starling.
Mm-hmm,
because
exactly.
those three, all other species are protected. So intentionally hurting them is, in fact, against the law,
right.
and one could possibly get prosecuted
if
you got caught doing something like that.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, those three species, you can do anything to that particular bird or their nest or the nestlings. Everybody else is protected, including their nest and nestlings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next caller up is in Aurora, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Good morning.
Yes.
As a bird... birder of long standing, I'm appreciating this program very, very much. If I might, I'd like to say that I went on the count with my son and my grandson and his girlfriend and taught her how to bird. She wanted to know how you do it, and it was very interesting, and the fact that this was a wonderful Saturday, this past Saturday, for birding. I wanted to say, too, I think bird watching and being interested and doing those things that invites birds into your environment and into your lifestyle is a wonderful thing. I don't know... my grandson and his girlfriend came all the way from Des Moines for Mother's Day and then did the count with us.
How many bird species did you have on the count?
I had 60. Somebody else that did the count had 80, and
great.
Somebody else had 78. The rarest bird we got was a sorrel rail.
Of course,
we didn't see it. We only heard it.
Heard him, yeah.
But I'm just saying that I'm glad there's stores like yours around to... encourage people to bird, because it does bring people together.
Yes, it does.
I think it's a wonderful thing. The story I wanted to tell was we're going down Route 25 in Kendall County, and my grandson, who's a very good birder, looks up, and there on the cell phone tower was a red-tailed hawk sitting on a nest, and the male there, too. And it was a wonderful sighting. So I never thought that cell phones would be that great for bird watching. So take care.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks
good
for the
birding.
Call. Are birds, particularly those kinds of birds that like that kind of high spot, is that common to see birds nesting in cell phone towers?
Yes, red-tailed hawks are notorious for nesting in strange places. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the ball diamonds on university campus has a nesting pair of red tails up on one of the light systems that light up the ball field. So it's not uncommon at all to see them do that.
Mm-hmm. We have somebody here, let me see, somebody on cell phone, so I want to get to them. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to attract bluebirds. I know that we have bluebirds in the area, and I've put out a nesting box for them. It's probably been 2 months already.
Okay.
And the problem I'm having is they stop and they rest on it, but another bird, and I believe it's a wren, has taken over the box.
Okay.
And it's a nest full of sticks.
Right.
And they're small, about the size of your small eggs in there about the size of the tip of your small finger.
Right. That's a house wren, definitely. How close to a tree line or bushes or shrubs do you have the house?
It's fairly close.
That's
It's probably 20 or 30 feet to a spruce tree.
Okay. You definitely need to move that house out further. That's the number one problem right there. House wrens like to be near cover. They will put sticks in any type of cavity they can find as long as it's close to some sort of cover. So if you can double the distance away from that pine tree, that's definitely going to help you with the house wren problem.
Am I through for this year trying to get them to nest in the box?
Definitely not. Bluebirds are just going right now through their first nesting. We get up to about three different nestings throughout the summer, so there's definitely a good chance that you're still going to get them.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Is that for people who have put up some kind of bird, house, shelter, whatever, and they're trying to attract a specific bird, and if they're not having any luck, is it mostly the case that it's in the wrong place?
Right, yes. That's the number one reason. It's wrong location. Certain spots are going to work better for certain species. Mm-hmm. Bluebirds, for example, love an open grassland area. Some short grasses around so they can hunt for insects on the ground are preferred. If you get it too close to a tree line or other trees, you're going to have house wren problems. If you get it too close to the outbuildings, say on a farm or near a house, you're going to have house sparrow problems and starling problems. So positioning is everything.
Okay. To line number one, and here's someone in Charleston. Hello.
Yes, I have a question about field glasses.
Okay.
That's actually two questions. What is the ideal range of field glass for bird watching?
A lot of people prefer the 8x40. If you want a little bit more power, a 10 power, like a 10x50 is a real good size also. The biggest difference between those two sizes is if you have a hard time holding things steady, people of elderly age, or if you're in an area even where it's real windy, the 10x is going to pick up a little bit of those shakes and wobbles and distort your view a little bit. So if you go with an 8 power, you usually have better control of the binocular as far as the clarity of the image that's going to be through it. An 8x40 also, the size of the binocular is usually a lot more comfortable to wear. So that's the one that's usually preferred.
And then the second question has to do with bluebirds. I finally got one in the nest, but I noticed a neighbor's cat is frequenting the area.
Okay.
And I wonder if you have any suggestions on how to get rid of it when the babes are born and they're on the ground.
Right. House cats are a huge problem whether you live in town or out in the country.
I'm in the country.
Yeah. If you can, I would recommend getting a live trap, trapping it, and take it to Humane Society. That's the bottom line. You have to remove that animal. There's no way you can harass it and keep tabs 24 hours a day on that cat of where he's at. So by removing him from the area, you're removing your problem completely.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Let's see where we're going to go next, to Champaign and line number two. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I sort of want to shift gears from bird encouragement to bird discouragement. We have a porch, and it's got pillars on it, and a bird keeps trying to build his nest in there, and it is just a mess. And we were wondering if you had any suggestions on how to discourage this bird from nesting in there.
What kind of species is it?
It might be a robin. I'm not positive.
Robin. Robins are extremely persistent. They're going to continue to try to build there. They've found that as being the best location. One thing I can definitely tell you, if you allow him to build it quickly, which will only take a couple days, it will be completely done. You can clean up whatever left on the ground, and then that area underneath it will maintain very clean. They're very clean nesters. They take the fecal sac from the young and fly away with it and drop it. They're not bringing back any more mud to maintain the nest or anything. Once it's built, it's done.
Okay. Well, okay. I mean, put a mirror in there or anything wouldn't?
No, that's not going to discourage him. Actually, if you put a mirror up, the male is going to attack it more often than not, and he's going to be hanging around 10 times more.
Well, there's really not much we can do, right?
No, not at all.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. That was the second question this morning we've had basically on the same. So it sounds as if once the bird has selected a particular place for a nest, they're going to be really
right.
If they've decided that's a good place, that's that, and you can keep taking it down and tearing it up, but right. They're going to continue to go back?
Exactly. See, timing is everything for them as far as nesting goes. They've selected a territory. They found a mate. They found a nesting site. Now the next progression of that story is building a nest, and they're going to do it at all costs. If you keep tearing it down, they're going to keep building it. People tear it down, throw it on the ground. They're using that same material you just tore out of there and putting it right back up in that spot again.
So at some point, won't they give up?
Possibly, yes. Usually the human gives up first.
Okay. Another car phone here, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. My question is kind of a corollary to the bluebird guy question.
Okay.
We live out on 4 acres in the country, and we have quite a few barn cats, semi-tame but wild cats, and they do a lot of hunting of mice and such for us. I've never fed birds because I don't want to feed the cats the birds, but I do enjoy watching birds, and I wondered if there's any particular type of bird or feeder that would be safer to have around cats, or if it's just better not to attract birds. We do have about an acre in prairie grass, and we've noticed that's brought in a lot of birds.
Right. If you're going to do any feeding and you have cats around, the key part of it is that your feeders and bird baths, you do not want to place them in areas where the cat can lay in ambush and get to the birds rather quickly.
Okay.
If you've ever seen a cat, they're extremely amazing how high they can jump, how fast they can move. So if you have a feeder that's out in the complete open, no bushes or shrubs around, that is your best bet because it's not giving that cat a place to lay an ambush to attack the birds. The problem with cats and birds is I hear it all the time. My cat brought me a bird. He didn't kill it. I let the bird loose. Cats have so much bacteria in their mouth and on their claws that the tiniest scratch or puncture mark on a bird is death to that bird. There's no question about it. That bird will die from an infection. So if you have, for example, if you put a shepherd's hook out with a finch feeder on it, for example, where you live, it sounds like a great location for that, right out in the middle of the yard, way at least 15 to 20 feet away from anything, you should be fine.
Okay. I appreciate that.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call. That brings up another question that has to do with sanitation and feeders.
Right.
Because people do also have to be aware of the fact that you can't just put up the feeder and just fill it with seed over and over again. Periodically, you have to clean it because
exactly.
You don't want disease to get going there and then for birds to come to the feeder and then to pick up the disease.
Right.
So how do you clean a feeder and how often should you clean it?
Several years ago, we had a huge outbreak of a bacteria that was affecting birds, especially the house finches, and house finch numbers got devastated by it. And that disease really brought to the forefront of cleaning feeders. You should wash a feeder at least once a month, warm soapy water, and cleaning the inside and the outside of the feeder completely, and then rinse it or mist it down with a real mild bleach and water solution. That makes sure it'll kill any fungus, mold, or bacteria that's there.
Okay. And how about bird baths?
Same thing. They should almost be cleaned daily.
Okay. We have plenty of other callers, and I think the next person we'll talk to is on, let me see, how about Piatt County in line number 1? Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Good morning.
I just had a couple of questions. I have a feeder, and I started using safflower feed with great success, actually. And so last year, for the first time, I saw 2 indigo buntings, and then I didn't see them anymore. And it happened again a week or so ago, and the same thing with a grosbeak.
Right.
And the rufous-sided, is it the rufous-sided towhee?
Towhees, yes.
Yeah, are they just going through?
Yes, they are. For example, the indigo buntings and the rosebreasted grosbeaks, they will nest in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But at our feeders and typically in urban settings, you're going to see them as they're coming into the area.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to establish territories, then pair up somewhere else more secluded. They're not going to be very, very constant at the feeders during the summertime.
Oh, okay.
Usually the month of May is the big push for those bird species to come through. I tell people to enjoy them when you see them, but don't expect much out of them as far as returning.
Okay, and then really quickly about cleaning, I hang a sock out for the finches,
okay.
And that gets pretty dirty. Should I just change the sock?
You could change the sock. They're relatively inexpensive
mm-hmm.
to change. If you do, you could take it in at night, soak it in some warm, soapy water for a couple hours, and then, like I say, rinse it real mildly in a real mild bleach water solution, and then rinse it with clean water, and it'll be fine.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you. Let's go to line number 2, which I think maybe is... Champagne, line 2.
Hello?
Maybe not. We'll go ahead. I'm
Indiana.
Not sure. Oh, you're in Indiana. Okay. Well, pardon me. We'll go ahead.
One, but, you know, it wasn't you.
Okay. Go ahead.
When I first started out to help the birds out with birdhouses and stuff, I invested in a lot of
nice expensive ones and some tall ones, and I read all the literature, and it said, if you want finches, put out thistle seed. So I went out and bought a lot of thistle seed, and I still have a lot of thistle seed.
Right.
They seem to prefer, I have one particular bird feeder that has three columns in it, about 15 inches high each, and two of them I put black sunflower seed for the oil, and then I have a very small birdhouse next to it that I have the regular mix, and I have trees everywhere, so I you know, the bluebirds and that sort of thing's out of the question with me, though I occasionally see a bunting and a grosbeak, you know, coming through, but most of the time I'm checking out different species of sparrows, and but the finches still don't eat the thistle seed,
right.
And I just wondered, where is this one of those myths that got started years ago? And it's in all the books too. You know, they, you know, everyone I've come across, and even the thing from the state Department of Natural Resources pamphlet they hand out. You know, that thistle seed's right up there if you want finches. But I don't know whether I have different finches or what. But I just wonder if you might make a comment about that, and if that's not an extraordinary thing to occur.
Thistle seed is very unique as far as what to do and when you should put thistle seed out. Thistle typically is fed during the spring and summertime. A lot of people do keep finches during the fall and winter and feed it, the thistle through. As a rule of thumb, thistle seed should never be stored at your house, whether it's in an enclosed container, you keep it in the refrigerator, anywhere, for more than 3 or 4 months. That's an imported seed, and it does not tolerate our humidity or lack of humidity during the wintertime, so it dries out. And finches are extremely picky about their thistle seed. If it's not fresh, they're not going to eat it. So typically the rules that we tell people, don't store it for more than 3 or 4 months at home. The thistle should never be in a thistle feeder outside for more than 4 weeks. And if you've got a half a tube gone and you're going to put new seed in on that tube, do not pour the new seed on top of the old seed. Recycle it through. Dump the old seed out, put your new in halfway filled, then put your old on top of it. The birds, for whatever reason, tend to eat from the top down on those feeders. So that way you're recycling that old stuff. Now, if you've got 20 or 50 pounds laying around at the house that you had since last fall, I can guarantee you it's no good. The finches are not going to touch it. What I would do with that seed is mix it with your other stuff, feed it at the ground level or in a hopper feeder. Other bird species will pick it up for sure. Buy small quantities of thistle. You'll definitely get your finches on it.
Okay, we've got about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign and Peoria. That's his business, and he's interested in birds, and they sell things like birding stuff and feeders and seed and just about anything that's related to enjoying birds. If you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next up is Champagne and Line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about putting out a wren house. Is it too late?
No, definitely not. They're just starting to show up. The males really haven't even paired up with the females quite yet. I had a call in this morning that one person said that they saw their wren just starting to investigate the house. So, no, you have no problem. The key is with wren houses, keep in mind they have at least more than one, at least two or more houses per yard, and you want to separate them out as much as possible. The male comes into the territory. He builds what we call a dummy nest in every house and cavity that he can find, then he courts the female, and then of course all the ladies like this story, the female gets to pick where she's going to nest at. So you've got plenty of time to put it up. They will nest several times throughout the year, and they won't necessarily use the same nest either. So even if you miss them on the first go around, you could pick them up on the second nesting.
Well, we had one 2 years ago nested in this house, and then last year a sparrow nested in it.
Okay. The house probably has too large of a hole. That's why the sparrow's getting in there. You can put a reducer on that house.
It has a reducer on it.
Is it a 1 inch or is it an inch and a half?
I don't know. I'll check it out.
Yeah, you want to go down as small as 1 inch. The house wren can still get in there, but the house sparrow cannot.
Okay.
Very
good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I know that wrens are little birds, but they can actually get into a hole that's only an inch across.
And they'll haul sticks in that are 7-8 inches long, no problem, fill the whole box up.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. 4 is next. Matt Toon, I believe. Line number 4. Hello.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is a very interesting program, sir. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that we couldn't keep finches at our feeder until we got the kind of feeder with the hole below the perch.
Right, the upside-down finch feeder.
Right,
yes.
Uh-huh, and now we have, I think, two pairs.
Of the goldfinches.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And also we have one variety of sparrow, which will tip upside down, but he can't hold that position too long, so he doesn't eat too much.
Right.
Then my question is, we have a hummingbird feeder with a glass ball and a glass tube extending from it with a little red plastic insert at the end of the tube.
Okay.
And we can't keep syrup in it. What is the secret? It drips out.
You need to get a different feeder. Those feeders are very nice to look at, but as far as practicality goes, they're not very good. The problem is with it is the nectar's held in there on a vacuum.
Yeah.
And so you have a pocket of air above the liquid. However, when it warms up, the air expands in there, and that liquid's got to go somewhere, and it's going to come right out that tube.
So it's never successful,
never.
Regardless of where the air bubble is.
It does not matter with that. The best thing you can do is try to keep it in as much shade as possible, but when we get into 85, 90-degree days, that air is expanding so quickly in there, it pushes it right out.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have one that's shaped like a big plastic strawberry with three little openings.
Right.
They seem to go to that. Is there anything else that would draw them, any other type of feeder?
As far as hummingbirds go, any of the nectar feeders that, like you've said, the one with the small base where the holding area is screwed into it, those work really well. There's a flat dish type also that will never, ever leak. It's very easy to clean, very easy to fill. Those are the most popular ones as far as...
A flat dish?
Yeah, they're called a flat dish hummingbird feeder. Several different companies make them out there.
And the secret to the syrup is like a simple syrup?
You want to use sugar water. You're going to take 4 parts water to 1 part sugar. Boil the water, dissolve the sugar in that, then let it cool.
Okay.
And whatever you do, do not use food coloring.
Do not use what?
No food coloring whatsoever.
Oh, food coloring. Right. Okay.
And another simple thing that you can do, if you've got a lot of hummingbirds around, one of the things that's really interesting to watch, if you take an old onion sack and put a couple of rotten bananas in that and hang it out near the hummingbird feeder, it attracts a little gnat that the hummingbirds absolutely love to feed on.
Oh.
And it's just a secondary way of feeding them, but it's really interesting to watch them.
So they feed on the gnats rather than the bananas?
No, yes, exactly.
I see.
Yes.
Well, that's very interesting.
Okay.
We'll give that a try.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We will just keep on going here, getting as many folks as we can in the time that remains. And next we'll speak with somebody in Champaign, and that's line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. First, I wanted to thank you for doing this show. It's very interesting, and it's fantastic that there are so many people interested in watching birds and taking care of them. I'm actually a student who just graduated from the vet school here in Champaign, and for 3 years I worked in the wildlife medical clinic that's housed here. We take care of injured and ill wildlife. And I just wanted to make a comment for all of your listeners who are very interested in their wildlife. When they are watching birds, if they do see baby birds nesting or on the ground, especially this time of year, if they don't look injured and they are actually alone, that's not to mean that they're orphaned. We get a lot of people who bring in baby birds who think that they're orphaned and they're trying to do a good thing by bringing them in, but in fact they are in reality separating them from their parents and interfering with the training that goes on, you know, to teach them how to fly.
Right, yeah, almost every bird that you find on the ground like that is in the fledgling stage.
Exactly.
And that means they cannot fly.
Exactly.
So they're in that stage from anywhere from 2 to 7 days, depending on the species, and that's the critical time of their life. There's no question. There's a lot of dangers that they're going to be facing, but the biggest thing that you want to do, we tell everybody, hands off.
Exactly.
Leave them
I
alone,
really
and they're
going
to be fine. Yes.
Great.
Excellent
thank
comment.
You.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks.
It's a good point. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We'll go on here and next talk with someone in Kankakee and line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, David, appreciate this program on birding.
Sure.
Just a comment for your listeners. If they're interested in checking on daily bird sightings in Illinois and some photographs that are being taken out there weekly or even daily, there's a site called birdingonthe.net. And birding on the is all one word. It's not, there's no spaces. And they can go to that site, birdingonthe.net, and click on regional specialties, it will list all the different states in the United States, and they can click on Illinois, and it will take them to a site that lists birders list their daily sightings on.
Mm-hmm.
And also, again, there are photographs that are sometimes photo sites are also listed on some of these sighting or some of these postings. Thought your listeners might be interested.
Very good. No, we appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I'm sure that there probably are on the internet, there's probably lots and lots of birding related stuff on
yes.
the internet.
Yeah. And like anything else on the internet, the news is instantaneous. So it's a great way of keeping up to date of what's going on and what rarities are in the area.
All right. Very good. And we have somebody else here who's waiting. And this is line number 3. And the caller's in Rantoul. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You had a number of calls from people who were being annoyed by nests near the front door on posts, etc. And a number of years ago, we had the same problem, and still do. But my husband had heard someplace about mothballs, that mothballs would keep the birds away. So he tried it, and now I don't know whether the robin just gave up or whether it really did work. However, we didn't have any nests after that point. Now, we do every year. I think they're different birds who haven't got the word yet, but there isn't room. They tried to do it behind the outdoor light, and for a robin's nest, that just isn't big enough. And not only that, but it's just very annoying for us to have to keep picking up because it keeps falling down. I haven't tried mothballs yet. I'm getting ready to move, and I have no idea where they are in the first place. But at any rate, I wanted to tell those people if they wanted to, it's worth a try anyway.
You got lucky. That's what that is.
The
olfactory senses on birds. It's pretty much been proven that they don't smell hardly anything. There's not much of a sense of smell for most of your bird species. As far as mothballs, I highly recommend not putting them outside. They are a dangerous chemical. You never know who or what's going to eat them or handle them. So,
these were high enough that. Nothing, you know.
Okay.
Couldn't hurt anything.
Yeah, probably just you outpaced the robin, and he decided to move on.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. You know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, a few weeks back there was an article on the local newspaper about the fact that we have apparently some pairs of Cooper's hawks that have successfully nested around Champaign-Urbana, and I kind of think I actually saw one of these birds, at least I know I saw a hawk in a neighbor's yard earlier this spring eating something, a smaller bird that it had caught.
Right.
I think it may indeed have been one of these hawks, but it started me thinking about the possibility that we might more in an urban area like Champaign-Urbana, that we might see more and more of those kind of birds, those kind of raptors that in the past maybe you wouldn't expect to see in an urban area.
Exactly. The Cooper's hawks and the sharp-shinned hawks, we see a huge push of them starting right around the end of September, first part of October. They're here really thick through the end of March, first part of April. Mm-hmm. A lot of them come from up north, and they come into this area. It's a nice area, a lot of trees, a lot of places to hunt, and there's a lot of food for them. So they're very, very common. We do have nesting pairs. There's no question about it. People have called in, brought pictures. I've seen a lot of different stuff on the Cooper's hawks in the area. Interesting bird. That's what they do, though. They do feed on other birds. So if you have a bird feeder up and you've got a hawk around, he's going to be taking birds right off that bird feeder. I get a lot of calls, especially in the wintertime, people calling up that there's a Cooper's hawk sitting on top of their bird feeder plucking a cardinal. So people get upset. One of the things that you can definitely do to discourage them, simply stop feeding the birds for about a week. Mm-hmm. Usually if you're taking away their food source, they're going to move on to other hunting grounds.
That's, again, one of those I'm glad we got to that, because obviously the hawk is just doing what it's wired to do.
Exactly.
And what you're doing is you're setting up a situation where you're doing something that will attract prey. So no big surprise, the predator is going to be attracted. So other than that, are there other things that you might be able to do with your feeding situation that would help to discourage that or say, for example, giving some cover
right, exactly.
for the birds?
Keeping those feeders next to or right out of a covered situation during the wintertime, a Christmas tree, instead of discarding it or turning it in for recycling, put it out right next to your bird feeder. It'll definitely increase the number of birds, plus it gives them a safe haven from aerial predation is what we call it, so that they can jump in there real quick when the hawks do show up.
And we just expect the hawks are going to be around for certain times of the year, or might they be something that are just going to decide, well, it's not bad living here, and we got a lot of stuff to eat, so we'll just stay.
You do have year-round residents now. Like you said, there are nesting pairs in the area, so they will be here year-round. But during the fall and wintertime, that's when the big push comes through, and it seems like almost everybody who puts a bird feeder up at some point in time is going to encounter a hawk in their yard.
Yeah. Now, I remember a couple maybe it was 2 years ago in the summertime, but one morning I was getting ready to come to work and was in the bathroom and heard just a racket, unbelievable racket squawking. And I think that it was robins. They were just having a fit. And I looked out, and on one of the posts on the deck on the back of our house, there was a hawk. No question in my mind what it was. It was huge. And it was sitting there, and it didn't seem to be really all that annoyed at the, but you know, the robins were squawking and squawking, and eventually the hawk flew off, but it just seemed to be minorly annoyed. But obviously the robins, they were really, really upset by that
especially, hawk. Yeah, especially springtime. They're protecting their young and their nest, and boy, they can really cause a racket when the hawk shows up.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much
for
talking with us. Our guest this morning, Larry Keller, owner of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign and Peoria. The program is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and the coffee bar. Also, the program is made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates this year, celebrating their 22nd anniversary. Bodywork has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Just before we go again, I wanted to remind you about the topics for tomorrow morning. In the first part of the show, we will be talking about the current story involving the mistreatment of Iraqi prisoners of war and how it is that we respond to that. And we'll be having two guests tomorrow, and I'm sure that on other programs, other days, we'll be talking about it as well. But this is kind of our first pass at the subject. And tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be talking with two guests, Wayne Madsen. He's an investigative journalist, columnist. He's a former intelligence officer for the National Security Agency. He is the author of a forthcoming book entitled Jaded Tasks, Big Oil, Black Ops, and Brass Plates. That'll be in the first hour, along with Marjorie Cohen, professor at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She's also executive vice president of the National Lawyers Guild. And that'll be in the first hour. Hour number two, then, we'll also talk with Paul Levinson. He is chair of communications and media studies at Fordham University, and we'll be talking about his book, which is titled Cell Phone, The Story of the World's Most Mobile Medium and How It Has Transformed Everything. So that's tomorrow. We're here weekday mornings, 10 to noon, 10 different topics every week. We always welcome your questions and calls and hope right now that you'll stay tuned, because up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine. Host Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Good morning. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll talk with historian Laurent Dubois. He is the author of Avengers of the New World. We'll talk with him about the legacies of slavery and colonial